You're listening to American Latino Radio on Sirius XM Channel 154. I am an American Latino, and I can vote. I was born in this country or was naturalized here. I'm old enough. In elections in the coming years, over 2 million American Latinos will vote in the state of Texas, but many more should. In California, nearly 65% of the Latino population is U.S. born, yet only half of those eligible vote. I am an American Latino, and I will vote. There are issues that affect me and my family. The men and women who are elected to hold state and federal offices will decide these issues. War and peace, health and wellness, immigration, energy and the environment, civil and labor rights, and much more. The American Latino vote is the American Latino voice. 25 million American Latinos will be eligible to vote in the next presidential election. But sadly, fewer than 50% of eligible American Latino voters turned out for the last one. I am an American Latino, and I must vote.
Are you satisfied with your health and happiness? Do you like where your life is going? I'm fitness expert and personal trainer Tara Marie Segundo, host of Tara Marie Live on American Latino Radio, Channel 154. I invite you to join me Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 5 Pacific. It's time to kick your life into high gear and create the health and happiness you deserve. Call me at 888-411-7242 with all your questions about whole person health. You're not just a body and a brain. You're an integrated system, and in order to be truly healthy and happy, you need to focus on the development of the mental, emotional, physical, social, and spiritual sides of you. So get ready to join the conversation on Tara Marie Live, weekdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 5 Pacific, right here on American Latino Radio, Channel 154.
The views and opinions expressed on American Latino Radio are solely those of each program host, their guests and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the view and or opinions of World Band Media, its subsidiary American Latino Radio, its executives and staff. In the case of advice or information provided on a program which is medical, financial, legal, or mechanical, please always consult an appropriate professional before taking any action. You're listening to American Latino Radio. Are you in love or love lost? Are you wondering how to meet the one who's right for you? Or tired of the whole dating scene? Are you newly single or newly married? Whoever you are, you will love Sue Haiti. Now here she is. Author, speaker, television personality, and our very own Love Sue Haiti.
Hey everyone, I'm back! And today we're talking about something very close to my heart, because even though I have never been married, ladies and gentlemen, I am a child of divorce. So I have been scarred. Definitely was. Mommy and Papi definitely did a number on me. I have a lot of my friends and a lot of my family members who unfortunately have experienced divorce because they are either divorced or were children of divorce. And my mother and my father were an interesting case, actually, because my mom and dad, they met here in the United States. They started dating. My father actually knew my mom back in the Dominican Republic, where my parents are from. But they didn't officially start dating when they came, you know, to this country separately. And then they found each other again because, you know, Dominicans kind of stick together. and they started dating, got married, had the children. And 2 years later, like, I think I might have been 2 years old when my mother and my father got divorced. I didn't know my mother and my father were divorced because I'm 2 years old. So, like, what does a two-year-old know? And my mother and my father kind of didn't really separate. So they got legally divorced, but they had like this back and forth relationship throughout my entire pretty much childhood and adolescence. So they legally got divorced, but then they got back together, but didn't get legally back together. So, of course, why did my mother divorce my dad? There were tons of issues going on. He cheated, right? So he was very unfaithful many, many times. And, you know, lots of dishonesty, because usually when there is infidelity, there is dishonesty. And a lot of just betrayal. Addiction was an issue also with my father growing up. My father used to drink a lot. I can't say that he was an alcoholic. I'm not really sure if I can point, you know, put that on him. He would have to claim that for himself. I know that he still does drink, but when I have been around my dad, he doesn't drink, you know, every day. But, you know, there's been drinking and different types of alcoholism. So I do feel like he definitely has an addiction or had an addiction. There was obviously trust issues because he was unfaithful. My father also was, because of his, you know, the drinking and the womanizing, he was in and out all the time. There was like a lot of inconsistency with my mom and my dad. Like he would leave the house and be gone for 2 to 3 days. And then he would come back and my mother would be furious and wouldn't want to let him back in and you know, take him back. But then he would cry and be all, I'm so sorry. And she used to be like, you and your crocodile tears. But then she would take him back. She would believe the crocodile tears. And obviously, when I'm a kid and I'm seeing this, like, I don't understand as a child. You don't understand. Like, so why? But mommy looks so miserable all the time. She's crying all the time. She's not happy. Sometimes Papi's not even around half the time. They argue. He's drinking. I didn't know, obviously, about the womanizing when I was a child, but I knew that he wasn't around. But you do think, like, if they're unhappy, why don't they just break up, right? Even as a kid, you think about that. And they didn't. I mean, I think when they were finally over was when I was 12. From what I could recall, because when I was 12, my mother moved me, my brother, my sister. She moved basically the family to Massachusetts. And I grew up in Massachusetts. You know, most of my adolescence, my formative years were in Lawrence, Massachusetts. I went to high school in Andover and prep school. I went to college at UMass. But I wonder if my parents would have still gone through that cycle and stayed together, even though they're legally divorced, and my mother wouldn't have shipped us off, like, let's move to Massachusetts. And I think that one of the reasons why she moved from New York City to Massachusetts is because she wanted the clean break. Like, I don't know if my mother would have been able to leave my father, like, really leave my father and end the cycle of inconsistency and the off and on and the betrayal and the addiction and the cheating. Just, like, she needed almost like a clean slate, a completely different state altogether to start anew. So I just find that really interesting. And now that I think about it as an adult, and of course, I think about my parents' relationship often because I do believe, I'm not a psychologist, but I do believe that what I saw when I was growing up, you know, how I saw their relationship unfold, the inconsistency, the off and on, the, you know, even the verbal abuse, things that I saw have affected me as an adult, have affected my relationships, my romantic relationships, even my friendships, actually. I talked about it before on the show. I do believe that we attract certain people for a reason. And there was a really long time that I was attracting when I was dating inconsistent men who were off and on, who would be all lovey-dovey when they were there. Like my dad was with my mom. When my father was present, he was like, and he wasn't drinking. He was like super lovey-dovey, super affectionate, really, really romantic. He would be really expressive, tell me he loved me, tell my mom he loved me. He loved our family. But then when he wasn't there. And it was obvious that he wasn't there because he would go like for 3, 4, 5, 6 days at a time, like ghost, disappeared, no calls, no nothing. So funny enough, strangely enough, I, for a long time, when I started dating when I was young, was attracted to men who reminded me of my dad. It was like the men who couldn't commit. Like when it came to if you were an unavailable man, I was like, ooh, what's your name? What's your number? Can we hang out? If you were a guy that, you know, didn't really tell me how you felt, like, it was like you would express yourself and you were really good with words, but your words maybe didn't have a lot of weight to them. You needed to be my boyfriend. I wanted you. So I know for sure that was because of what I saw growing up. The pattern, the relationship pattern between my father and my mother, I definitely repeated over and over and over again. And even the way the difference is that the way that I would deal with it was completely different from my mom. I would take the guys back, but I would act like I wasn't fazed, like, oh, I don't need you. My mother would like be the crier who would, you know, definitely express herself way more than I ever did. Now I'm weepy all the time because I'm more connected with my emotions. I'm okay with being vulnerable now. I wasn't okay with being vulnerable because even though I wanted these men in my life because they reminded me of my dad, because I felt like that's what a relationship was supposed to be. That's the role model, the model of relationship that I grew up with. So that's all I really knew. And even my other relatives, my aunts and my uncles, like, their relationships kind of were similar. It wasn't as dysfunctional. But I'm sure there was definitely some dysfunction. But there was a lot of that hot and cold behavior where even though my uncles, they've been great uncles to me, but even in their relationships, they're hot and cold emotionally. So I would always attract really, you know, hot and cold men who weren't, who just didn't want to commit, weren't dependable whatsoever. But I felt like for a long time that that's like what a relationship was and what I almost deserved because my father definitely wasn't a consistent dad. If he's not going to be a consistent spouse who's dependable and reliable, he's definitely not going to be a consistent dad who is dependable and reliable. So I definitely had to fight that cycle. That battle has been won, though. It has been won because I am in a really great relationship now where my boyfriend is pretty much the opposite of everything that I grew up thinking was supposed to be a man in a relationship because I did the work. I went to therapy, and I definitely did the work to kind of be just to be more aware. I think it starts with awareness. If you are aware and you know, okay, I keep choosing these type of men or these type of women, and like there's a pattern now. Like the first time was like, oh, cool, yeah, you learn your lesson. The second time is like, okay, this is familiar. The third time you're like, okay, so maybe it's something I'm doing. For some people, you need like 10 times. I needed a lot of times, people. That was a very, very long merry-go-round ride. I was literally on the Ferris wheel for years and years and years. And I'm scared of heights, which was the funny thing, because I used to hate these relationships and I used to want love so bad. And I wanted like the guy who was going to be there for me and who I could be, you know, count on and who I could be myself with. But then I like wasn't choosing these men. I was choosing the complete opposite of that because I didn't think I deserved it. So listen, we are going to talk about invisible divorce today. And I actually had no idea what this concept was at all. And now that I know a little bit about it, I don't know that much about it still. I'm like, were my parents in an invisible divorce this whole time? I mean, they were legally divorced, but they were in a relationship, even though they were divorced, where there was animosity, there was cheating, there was like resentment, there was emotional dysfunction, and they stayed together. You know, they didn't try to work it out ever. Like it was this cycle, and like they didn't even try to go to couples counseling. And listen, my parents are super old school. There's no way that my parents were gonna go. My dad, being the macho guy that he is, was no way you're gonna tell him let's go to therapy and he was gonna go. To this day, I'm like, Dad, you gotta go to therapy because you got issues. And he's like, me, therapy? I'm an old guy. I am who I am. No one's gonna change me. And he's right. No one's gonna change my dad. My dad is pretty much the same guy that he's always been from what I can remember. So yes, today we are talking about divorce. We're talking about invincible divorce and invisible. I always get those words confused. Invincible and invisible. Invisible divorce. And I would love to hear if you have any questions or comments or any, you know, just any experiences with this, whatever I've been telling you about. If you are a child of divorce, if you are experiencing something right now in your relationship and you're wondering if like this detachment and distance may be leading to a divorce or an invisible divorce, you can give us a call. The number is 888-411-7242. That's 888-411-7242. But listen, it's not just me today. I have a guest and she knows about this topic much more than I do. With me here is Dr. Megan Fleming. She is a clinical psychologist. She has over 15 years of experience. She actually specializes in treating men and women, you know, regarding sexual health, relationship issues, sexual dysfunction, sexual expression. And yes, she also talks about invisible divorce. And when I read her website, I saw that as a topic and I was like, I need to have her on because this phenomenon is like, it's just so interesting to me. Welcome, Dr. Megan Fleming.
Thanks so much for having me. You said so much and I'm like, I was like, oh, I could in any point jump in. There's so many things to say. One, I think is like, I definitely want to talk about this concept and it's right. Funny. I too switch the words invisible.
And invisible. It's like maybe a little letter. Yeah, it's just like one little letter that like makes it any different.
So first I want to say, because I think so often, at least the way that I was raised, you know, you're taught that as an adult, you should just grow up, get over it, whatever happened yes. or didn't happen in your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is those first 7 years, it's what gets conditioned in your nervous system. It's what you were taught and learned love is.
Yes.
And so we call it the unconscious collusion. Without even thinking about it, you it's this repetition and these patterns that you're talking about. You go out into the world and you seek the exact thing that you knew, and that was your template of love.
Yeah.
Even though it isn't what you ultimately wanted, it's what you knew. And so I really want to invite your audience members to recognize that there is so much to doing the work about getting conscious and getting mindful and noticing patterns when things work for us and when they don't. Because, you know, our parents, I think, often did the best that they could, and, you know, they got what they got and they didn't get what they didn't get, right?
Right, right.
But I think it's our job. I'm a mother of two, 15 years married myself, that we have to be really conscious about what we're handing down and what we're not handing down.
I think that's really difficult, but even my sister's married, she has a daughter, and like, she hasn't been to as much therapy as I've been, maybe because I feel like just as a person, we're just different, and I feel like I seek certain things out more in terms of awareness and just like not repeating the patterns. But I notice sometimes that she does things and says things that my mother did with her daughter, and it's like, she's not even aware of it, and I pointed it out to her, like, you know, Dana, you say this and you're saying this to Neela, and, you know, like, mama used to say that to us, and you don't want to, like, then shape this idea to your daughter about, like, love and relationships and guys in general. But I think, how do you feel like people can become more aware?
Well, it's what you just did for your sister, and it's what we can do for ourselves and partners in relationship. You become a mirror, right? Mm. Be a mirror to show someone, have you noticed? Are you curious? Have you considered? Have you? Because we're not aware, right? And so when someone brings it to our attention, it is that opportunity for growth. Whether or not you can receive it or allow
it—that's the question.
It's a whole other
story.
Because
people get defensive when you become—I love that—become the mirror, and they're like, "I don't do that. That's your problem, not my problem."
It's all about the how. But yes, this actually ties us into the whole concept of invisible divorce,
right?
Because it's interesting. Your parents were legally actually divorced, but
yes,
together
they were a mess.
But you know, when you think about it, I think it's less now because a lot of people even aren't getting married, but the statistics are actually a little less than 50% getting divorced, but still a huge percentage.
Right.
But, so when you look at people who are married, the way I've thought of invisible divorce is it's like the people who are together and apart.
Oh, I know a lot of people like that, though.
I think it's a majority of marriages. And I think it's also what's meant to happen. I love on your website, that homepage, it says Love Trends, Why Chemistry Alone Doesn't Make a Relationship.
Yes, that's a really good article that Krista Purnell wrote for my site. And for a long time, I was chasing chemistry, and I wasn't thinking about compatibility.
It was meant to end. It was
core values, things that matter in relationships. Like, have these conversations, people. I wasn't having these conversations until, like, when I became, I don't know, like 35. It took me a really long time to have those conversations because, you know, that romantic, passionate, chemical love is, like, what we think is going to make, like, everything's going to work out because of chemistry.
Right. And it is a natural high. It's
right.
Both dopamine and oxytocin. Mm-hmm. It is a drug, right?
Yeah.
It's like you don't need to sleep. It's the feeling in your gut, all that stuff. But mm-hmm. It was meant to end.
Yeah.
If you understand the nature of love in romantic relationships, I think most people don't recognize if that's what you're looking for, you're setting yourself up. Because the rubber meets the road.
Right.
You know, the bud falls off. When you really... The best thing about a relationship is, to your point of about attraction, you attract both the parts of someone you'd like more of in yourself, right?
Right.
The things that you find amazing and attractive. But they also have resonance of parts of your parents that, probably you don't like so much. And so I actually have a whole worksheet about, I call it then when. So it's like in the beginning, it's like they're really outgoing and then they become controlling, and the person who is like laissez-faire becomes lazy, and the person who is like the risk-taking, daring becomes reckless, right?
That's interesting.
It's anything is an asset or liability depending on your perspective. The thing you're so attracted to becomes the thing you want to kill off. And the thing is that nobody...
Oh, look at that. The things you're more attracted to are the things you want to kill off. That's really interesting. I've never even thought about that. And now I'm thinking about my relationship. I'm like, what am I attracted to, Dave? And do I want to kill something off of Dave? Do I really want to? Listen, we're talking to Dr. Megan Fleming. She's a clinical psychologist. She has over 15 years experience. And we're talking about invisible divorce and so much more. Because now we're talking about attraction. We're talking about how our childhood affects our choices. Chemistry does end people. And I love that concept because I had a really hard time really thinking that, oh, no, but that if the chemistry and the romance is dead and the relationship sucks, that's not true. Listen, if you have
not
any questions,
true.
You can give us a call at 888-411-7242. That's 888-411-7242. 411-7242. I'd love to hear your stories, any comments, any questions. We are here, but please come back right after the break.
This is American Latino Radio, the only home for talk, information, and entertainment expressly created for the English-speaking Latino. But don't call now. This is a pre-recorded program. Thanks for listening to American Latino Radio. We'd like to welcome you to an entirely new programming concept, American Latino Radio, programming by, for, and about American Latinos. Well, who is an American Latino? If you were born in the United States of Latino heritage, you are an American Latino. If you were born in Latin America but were brought here at an early age, you are probably an American Latino too. In the coming months, American Latino Radio will produce and offer a series of programs hosted by and created for listeners from the approximately 35 million American Latinos in the United States today. These programs focus on a wide range of subjects, including health and wellness, politics, entertainment, investment, house and home, sports, car repair, and so much more. We will be here on SiriusXM Channel 154 every day. Please join us on American Latino Radio and become part of the conversation at 1-888-411-7242 or visit us online at AmericanLatinoRadio.net. I am an American Latino, and I have fought for this country since its founding. I sided with Governor de Galvez in support of the revolution against the English to help create this great country, and with Captain Jorge Farragut in the War of 1812 to keep the English from coming back. I fought at the Alamo against the armies of Santa Anna to declare a free Texas, and I knew the pain of brother against brother fighting on both sides of the Civil War. 500,000 American Latinos marched off to World War II as part of the Greatest Generation, and many did not come back. I have soldiered, sailed, and flown to war wherever I've been sent. I'm still fighting in Afghanistan. Since the American Civil War, I have been presented our nation's highest military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor, over 60 times. More than 40 of those times, posthumously. I am an American Latino, and I dare you to say otherwise. A message from American Latino Radio, SiriusXM Channel 154, at AmericanLatinoRadio.net. Love Sue Haiti? Everyone does. Now here she is again.
Yes, here I am again with Dr. Megan Fleming. She's a clinical psychologist for over 15 years. And today we're talking about invincible divorce. Invisible, not invincible. Invisible, because I keep saying that wrong. You can give us a call. The number is 888-411-7242. That's 888-411-7242. If you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call throughout the entire time that we are here. And it's funny, during the break, we were talking about this list about like what you find the most attractive eventually in the relationship becomes like what like drives you insane. And now that I think about it, I have some time to think, ladies and gentlemen. And one of the things that my boyfriend found really attractive about me is how much energy I have. And not too long ago, like 2-3 weeks ago, we went to dinner and we had been kind of having these like little spats, like no arguments, no. But we were just getting on each other's nerves because now we live together and oh my God, things are just more magnified when you live with someone. Like their quirks that you thought were cute, you're like, that's not so cute every day. So we went to dinner and I was talking with my hands as I often do because that's just part of how I communicate. And he thought that the way I communicated was like so fun before. And he literally, when we were eating dinner, was like, can you stop talking with your hands? Like, it's really annoying me. And I told him, no, I can't stop talking with my hand. That's the way I communicate. And he was like, but that's not fair. You can't like try to like kind of change something or like, you know, maybe modify it. I was like, you know what? I believe in modifying things. I believe in meeting. If you have a need and something that I'm doing is making you uncomfortable or you're not feeling heard or you're feeling a certain type of way that is negative, I will try to modify whatever behavior that is, but I'm not going to change who I am at my core. So if I communicate with my hands, I'm not going to put my hands behind my back because you're annoyed right now. And we had this big discussion about exactly that, about, you know, what things can be changed in a person. Like my father was like, I am who I am. You have to accept me as I am and I'm never going to change. I don't go into relationships with, you know, with anyone and not my boyfriend that way. There are things that I feel like you can shift and you can become better. But there are things I believe that at your core, you are who you are.
Absolutely. It's funny. I'm totally resonating with you because you know, I think my husband was attracted to me because I was quote unquote the party girl. Mm-hmm. And then he started to shush me because he thought I also talk with my hands and I'm just too loud, right?
Right.
He grew up, he's Canadian and he grew up in a very conservative, quiet, museum-like household.
So, museum-like, oh, I would die in there.
That's what I said. I don't think I would have gotten out of high school. But I also being in the psychologist and having trained, and I was like, I am who I am, you know, when we
right.
got first married. And then John Gottman, he's the famous marital researcher. He talks about like the stable house and what makes a great marriage. And one of the things is the ability to be open to influence.
Right.
So to your point, it's not about losing yourself or cutting off parts of self because that never works. You can't do that. But it is about what is the impact of this choice or behavior on others. And are there times
question.
I can be mindful? Because it's really about, if you think about a relationship, it's what do we think about the space between you and your partner and what are you putting into that space? Is it something loving, nurturing, considerate, thoughtful, or is it you're upset, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it could be, you know, most times I work with couples, it's finger pointing, right? If
right.
only he or she did X, Y, or Z. And we always say if you're pointing a finger, three are coming right back at you, right?
Yeah.
So you
yeah.
got to look at yourself. So in this concept of invisible divorce, it's like you go from that romantic phase, that part ends, and then a lot of couples get stuck and want to consider, not just being couples therapists, sort of a power struggle.
Right.
And it's how you start to treat one another. And it's withholding, it's neglectful, it's accusing, it's rejecting, it's sexless, it's all these things that, you know, to the outside world, it may look like you go to church, you take your kids, you may be going to soccer. It looks fine on the outside, but in the inside, it's almost like you're together, but you feel unbearably alone.
So it's like a facade. They have a facade and they look like the perfect marriage and couple on the outside. And like when they're at home, they're not even talking.
Well, that, and there's a range of what it looks like, because there are also
right.
those that everybody knows what it looks like, and they're like, oh my God, would they just get divorced? Because
oh, I know people, yeah, I'm like,
you know, it's kind of
like,
ugly.
How long, yeah, I think you'd be better, like, alone. Like, you'd be way happier alone. A lot of people know couples like that.
Absolutely. So there's, I'm just saying, there's a huge range
right.
of what it can look like, but what happens is, unlike your parents who actually got divorced, a lot of times people won't get divorced for religious reasons,
right.
for the kids, for financial reasons, especially now more than ever, and it's like, I don't think people recognize the huge cost, not only to self, because I think it's deadening and the numbness and all the ways you check out, have affairs.
Right.
You know, but it's also, and you're highlighting it, is kids. To me, as a couples therapist, the kids are the leverage. It's like I see the adult versions all the time. And I really try to help couples realize they think they're sucking it up and it's not so bad and that their kids aren't really
right.
being impacted
and
or affected.
Yes, I'm proof.
And,
yeah.
and I think they're denying their reality and not taking ownership or responsibility for their contribution to what they're adding to the relationship. Because so many times in couples therapy, it's like, I've done it all. And
right.
I'm like, really? How about the vulnerability piece? Did you do that?
Yeah, well, a lot of people, it's funny because I always used to say, I used to tell my mom, and you know, not to try to like blame her for my messed up adulthood. Because I take accountability, I made decisions that, you know, of course, my childhood influenced my, you know, the decisions that I made as an adult. But after a while, you have to take accountability, you have to be responsible, be aware and be like, I'm doing this and I need to stop if it's not making me happy. But I would tell my mom all the time, you know, I think I would have been like a lot more functional and healthy if you would have just like left my dad and like been without him, like 2 years old on, like when you got legally divorced, if you would have just like stayed divorced. And even if he wasn't in our lives, like I would have felt like, yes, I would have missed having a father figure, but then I wouldn't have seen a lot of the things that I saw as a kid that really affected me in a negative way as an adult. And I just think the I'm staying with him or with her for the children is such a cop out. You're doing more harm than good.
Yeah, and I think there really is research to show it depends on the nature of the relationship. Certainly, if it's conflictual,
right.
if you're seeing verbal abuse, physical abuse,
yes.
Dad going off for days at a time, not knowing where he is, if he's going to show up, that kind of an environment is clear, is not healthy
right.
for the kids. There are some people who, you know, quote unquote, protect the kids and really mask them from that. But I'd still say it's an energy thing and it feels cold.
I right? love that.
It either feels so hot, like it's like on fire and, you know, angry, and that's not healthy, right?
Right.
Or it feels so cold and dead. You know, it's like you don't want to, in my opinion, model that for your children either, because you really are giving them a template of what ideally a healthy relationship looks like, which does mean that there's fighting. You know, it's
of
not
course.
Avoidance of problems.
This is not a relationship isn't like a rainbow every day. That's not what it is. Yeah.
In fact, that's another thing we talked about on break. You know,
yes.
In our culture, you know, often sex, quote unquote, is a dirty word. And people, when we say that relationship or marriage is work, people think work is a dirty word. And I'm,
yeah, they're
and I'm
like, oh, I'm going to have to put up my shirt and dig coal. Like it's.
But I think the things we work on in life and think about any practice in your life, it's like the things you value and you can count on. And it's the impact of your effort. And
right.
So it's like it. The rewards are limitless and priceless.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just have to reframe. You know, one of the things I say to couples in the situation is do 100% of your 50%. Right. Only you can't control anybody else but you.
Right.
But if you control what you do and how you react and what you put into the space between the two of you, it's like you'd be amazed how your partner can soften if all of a sudden you're leaning into them and being affectionate
instead of pushing.
Instead of pushing, yeah. Criticizing,
right.
Name calling.
Right. So many things that we do sometimes as human beings to the people that we love. Listen, we are talking about invisible divorce and we're talking about relationships and marriage in general. So if you have any questions, you can give us a call. The number is 888-411-7242. That is 888-411-7242. I am Love Suhaiti and I'm here with Dr. Megan Fleming. So if you have any questions again, that number is 888-411-7242. I do have a question because we talked about the spectrum, right? So like some of it is obvious. Like the abuse, the cheating, the days at a time, you know that's like has to end. But what are like on a smaller, like the opposite end of the spectrum where people might not even realize they're in an invisible divorce? Like what does that look like?
You know, I think there's a number of examples. Everything from he's never there for me. He says things are fine, but I feel like he never looks at me the way that we did when we first met, to she never stops complaining. And no matter what I do, it's wrong. Not enough. Not good enough. To we stopped having sex years ago, to...
Yeah, the sex is a big one for me. That's like red flag, 3, 5, 20 red flags. Like, if you're not having sex with your spouse, so your whoever it is that you're with, you don't even have to be married. Like, that is bad. There's no intimacy.
Yeah, sexless marriages are huge. And again, they're defined by less than 10 times in a year.
Wait, what?
The definition...
Repeat that?
The definition of a sexless marriage is sex less than 10 times a year.
Less than 10 times a year? How do those people survive?
Well, I tend to agree with you that it's a huge flag and warning sign, like a big red light to look at in your marriage. And I mean, I see it in my office and I also see it, sadly, amongst closer friends of mine. And, you know, it's like it's a ticking time bomb as far as I'm concerned, because I can tell you sometimes you know, women will say, you know, my husband loves me. He's not that kind of guy. He would never cheat.
Right.
And it's like, you know, push someone too far too long and, you know, you're setting yourself up.
And even women, listen, I know tons of women, whether it's emotional cheating, actual going out and having physical sexual affairs. Women cheat, too, because they feel they're not desirable.
They feel neglected.
They feel neglected. Yeah. So it's not just men who don't get some love in the bedroom or wherever you want to get it.
And they act out, hands down.
Yes.
And it's like I'm so struck by, like, why instead of going to your partner and figuring it out, it feels – Imago is the kind of couples therapy I'm certified in, and they call it an exit.
Right.
You're taking emotional energy and you're taking it outside of your relationship. You're trying to get your needs met. So it could be workaholism, it could be internet porn, it could be an affair. But it's like, why is it you feel like you can't lean in toward your partner for that need? It's like you know.
I think it might be like fear of rejection because you're not getting it. So, and I do think like before a relationship becomes sexless, there is the, come on, honey, can we? And like, oh, I'm tired or I have a headache. Oh, come on, can we? I'm busy. I got to go to work. I don't have time for that. So you already feel... The rejection already started before it was like no sex. It didn't go from like you humping like bunnies to like the next week, like I haven't had sex in 3 months with my spouse or my significant other.
But this is another awesome topic and question. In fact, I was on Girl Boner's podcast today exactly answering this question about men with low libido and how it feels to women. And, you know, we were built or grew up in a society where men's supposed to be Superman and like the postman deliver in any kind of weather.
Right.
And the reality is, guess
what? That's not true.
We're mammals. Sometimes they're exhausted. They're tired.
Sometimes we're not in the mood.
And so, again, it never feels good personally.
Right.
But this is where the conversations really have to happen.
Yes.
And couples do not have these difficult conversations.
Mm-mm.
They avoid them like the plague, or they play it out with their girlfriend.
Do you think it's because, like, sex is still, like, an uncomfortable topic to talk about for a lot of people?
Yes, absolutely. But my God, in 2015 and after Viagra sales and the whole, like,
you think you would be able to be like, hey, you know, I'm just like tired right now. It's not about you, but it's making me feel like you don't want me. But a lot of people don't have those conversations. And if they do, when they do, they're angry already.
Absolutely. And it's also it's important to think about what does sex mean? Because for some,
for
some women, it can be, to me, it boosts my self-esteem or makes me think that I matter. And it's like, is it you miss the sex?
Or the feeling.
Or the feeling of being desired.
Right.
Which is often one of the biggest turn-ons when you have it. So, you know, when it comes to sex, it's a really complicated and...
It's individual. It's individual. I mean, I think there's also the sexless marriages where, well, you know, like, or relationships where, like, one partner is okay having it, like, once a week, and then another person has just, like, a higher libido and, like, they want more sex, like they want a higher frequency of sex per week.
Right.
So that's a conversation that needs to have, because there's going to be frustration there.
And it changes over time. We call that the desire discrepancy,
right?
And
yeah, because I used to want to hump like a bunny when I was like in my 20-something. And
I
now,
still do. What
I mean,
can I tell you?
I mean, I don't want to hump every day, but I definitely don't. I'm tired though, Megan. I do a lot. So, but I still try to. But then I also feel like there's, sometimes it doesn't have to be full on sex, you know, like sometimes,
absolutely,
you know, you have oral sex, you don't massage, you make out, you like any.
And sometimes
type
you
of,
give and you don't receive.
Sometimes you give and you don't receive. That's right. That's right. Preach. I feel like we should. I feel like I should have someone snapping their fingers right now, because it doesn't have to be full on sex. Like,
absolutely,
you orgasm, I orgasm. Sometimes if your partner has a need,
you help them out.
You help them out. Exactly. And however way that you can. So, listen, we're talking to Dr. Megan Fleming about invisible divorce and just marriage in general. So the number here is 888-411-7242. That's 888-411-7242. If you have any questions or comments about what we are discussing, I'd love to hear you. Listen, I love how when we talked about relationships being work, I feel like just today, I'm thinking about doing something special for my boyfriend, because he's been working really hard. He has a business. He has a full-time job. And some people wouldn't do this, but I want to, like, write him. I want to buy him a card at, like, Duane Reade or whatever. And I just want to, you know, I'm really proud of you. And to me, that's not work. But to other people, it's like, oh, I got to go to Duane Reade. And but I'm doing it, you know, because not because I feel like I have to, but because I know that he needs something. And he hasn't even told me, I need you to acknowledge me. But that's the type of work that I like to do in my relationship, because I know it makes him feel good. And in the long run, it's just going to make us continue to be just connected in the end. You know, like,
right. These are core skills about a relationship. And, you know, the language I use is caring behaviors and appreciations. You know,
right.
So often we just take for granted, you know, when your partner's really working hard. And it's stepping outside of that to say, you know what, I see you, you matter, and I really appreciate. And when you take gestures to show them how much you care, this is what really nurtures our relationships.
Right. Yeah. And I think most people don't do it because they think it's a chore. They just don't think about it. I mean, I'm super busy, but today I just thought about it. Yesterday he was talking to me about something that was going on at his, you know, job, his company. And I just, like, you know, I feel like this is him telling me that he's stressed and I should do something, a caring behavior, because
I want to.
And because I also want him to know that, like, I'm hearing him and I'm there for him and I'm proud of him. So it's
huge.
So simple. It's like $2.99, people, $2.99 to do something super sweet. So listen, again, we're talking to Dr. Megan Fleming. She's a clinical psychologist for over 15 years here in New York City, and she specializes in treating men and women. We're having a blast talking about invisible divorce, my bad, and also marriages. Listen, we're talking about relationships in every shape and form. I love that we're talking about pretty much everything, even though the focus is invisible divorce, and I love that you gave me the spectrum, because listen, then you were eccentric. Now you're crazy, people. This is what people think about when you've been together for a long time and you love each other. Perspective changes, and I love that. Oh, I like this one. Childlike, and now they're just childish. I think that's a good one for men, because I thought about that with my boyfriend. I was like, he's so childlike, and now I'm like, sometimes I'm like, okay, he needs to grow up. What's going to happen when we have kids, people? Listen, you can give us a call. The number is 888 888- 888-411-7242. That's 888-411-7242. I would love to hear your questions. I would love to hear your comments. If you are going through anything right now in your marriage and you need advice, we are here. If you think you're going through an invisible divorce and want to talk to your partner about it and get some advice, you can also give us a call. The number again is 888-411-7242. That's 888-411-7242. I'm here with Dr. Megan Fleming. I keep messing up your name. Dr. Megan Fleming. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm drinking too much water, but please do not go anywhere. We will be right back after the break.
This is American Latino Radio, the only home for talk, information, and entertainment expressly created for the English-speaking Latino. But don't call now. This is a pre-recorded program. Thanks for listening to American Latino Radio. I am an American Latino. And I can vote. I was born in this country or was naturalized here. I'm old enough. In elections in the coming years, over 2 million American Latinos will vote in the state of Texas. But many more should. In California, nearly 65% of the Latino population is U.S. born. Yet only half of those eligible vote. I am an American Latino. And I will vote. There are issues that affect me and my family. The men and women who are elected to hold state and federal offices will decide these issues. War and peace, health and wellness, immigration, energy and the environment, civil and labor rights, and much more. The American Latino vote is the American Latino voice. 25 million American Latinos will be eligible to vote in the next presidential election. But sadly, fewer than 50% of eligible American Latino voters turned out for the last one. I am an American Latino. And I must vote. We'd like to welcome you to an entirely new programming concept, American Latino Radio, programming by, for, and about American Latinos. Well, who is an American Latino? If you were born in the United States of Latino heritage, you are an American Latino. If you were born in Latin America but were brought here at an early age, you are probably an American Latino too. In the coming months, American Latino Radio will produce and offer a series of programs hosted by and created for listeners from the approximately 35 million American Latinos in the United States today. These programs focus on a wide range of subjects, including health and wellness, politics, entertainment, investment, house and home, sports, car repair, and so much more. We will be here on Sirius XM Channel 154 every day. Please join us on American Latino Radio and become part of the conversation at 1-888-411-7242 or visit us online at AmericanLatinoRadio.net. You're listening to American Latino Radio, where we all love Sue Haiti. And here she is again.
I love you all, too, and I love my guest, Dr. Megan Fleming. She's a clinical psychologist for over 15 years, and we're talking about invisible divorce. What does it look like? What steps do you need to take? You know, how do you even talk to someone that you are in, you know, married to about being in an invisible divorce? Like, how do you, we know how to identify it now. We know what it looks like in the different spectrums because we talked about it early on in the show, but let's say that you see it. You're like, wow, I think that I'm an invisible divorce. How do you even approach this with your significant other and your spouse? Megan, what do you think?
Well, I think, as you just said that, and we talked about this a little bit earlier also, it's like, what's the state of my union, my marital union? And when you start to identify that you're feeling alone and disconnected and maybe even deadening or numb or need to take on behaviors to, you know, manage those feelings, that it should be a huge wake-up call. And you know, it's important to recognize that what I heard you say is, like, how do you bring it to your partner? But it's also to say, you know, your partner may or may not be ready to work on it, to own it, or to acknowledge it. So the first step in anything is consciousness raising, to name it, to know it, because then you can take an actionable step. So the first thing I would say is own it for yourself. And, you know, two big steps I say is take 100% of your 50%. You know, get out of the finger pointing, the blaming. It would be better if only, right? Look at what you're adding and putting into the space and how it may be and how that would make your partner react.
Right.
And the other is, you know, our brains are wired for negativity bias. It's like, think about the last time someone gave you a compliment and the last time someone gave you some critical feedback.
And we always think about the critical feedback first.
That's the only thing you remember.
We're so negative as people. We're just like, I didn't know that, but
it's a negativity bias.
I try to be very positive, but even I, as positive and optimistic as I try to be, remember, especially in a relationship, like remember the bad first, especially when you're like in a really bad place in your relationship.
Sure. We call it the negativity bias, and we're hardwired for it. And so John Gottman, the researcher, says the 5-to-1 rule: for every negative thing, consciously draw your attention to 5 positive, because you really have to set that balance. Because so many couples fall under what I call the narrative or the story. I am, I'm not, my partner is, my partner isn't. And you get so locked, you don't even see the light at the end of the tunnel.
That's true.
So the first step is like, wow, can I even imagine, picture, reframe, revision this relationship where you create your own happy ending? And then you actually take steps to make that happen.
Yeah, I love that because it seems so simple. It sounds so simple. It's like you say it, and I'm like, yes, reframe, revision your relationship, people. Do it now. But it definitely is harder for people to step outside themselves and really think, okay, not blaming, you know, actually taking accountability and making choices so they do change the nature of the relationship if it needs to be changed. And I love the revisioning, because when you are stuck in a rut and you're in a relationship and you see the negative because of negativity bias, it's almost like you can't see anything but like how terrible your relationship is. And it's so difficult to move past it and remember the good and remember that it can get better again.
Yeah, and a huge piece of actually what you're saying, because, you know, it's like this idea of positive thinking, revisioning. Right. A lot of people have huge blocks, and the blocks often are in the emotions, right? And so let's go back to what we talked about earlier. Some of it is rooted in what's historical in you.
Yes.
So we always say if your emotional reaction is hysterical, it's historical.
Right.
Right?
And I love that. And it's like hysteria. It's like
if it's too big, it's not what your partner just did. It's what it reminds you of, right? What it's triggering.
That's
in you.
True.
And so the skill in working with couples or being in a marriage is that when emotion comes online, rational thinking goes offline.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to slow it down, because you cannot think from that place.
How do you slow it down?
So it's a version of a kid in a timeout, right?
Put yourself in a timeout, people.
Because what happens, and you'll see this in couples, typically one person, we call it fight flight, right? One person comes out and protests and gets loud, and the other person, we call it the freeze or flight. They're out of there. They see you coming a mile away, and their nervous system shuts down.
Oh, that's my boyfriend. He's like, I need to be alone. I'm like, what do you mean you need to be alone? We're in the middle of an argument.
I got the same dynamic in my relationship. But what we've learned is I now know it's like, he sees me coming a mile away before I even open my mouth.
Right.
He sees the look in my face.
The expression, the body language. He sees me rolling my neck. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go to the room. Where are you going?
You start to appreciate how your nervous systems interplay with one another,
right,
it's a huge opportunity to be like, flag. You know what I mean? Or create a word or phrase. But then you both really just need
Breathe,
because you got to reset your nervous system. It's like, it's the amygdala. It is lightning fast. Emotion comes online faster than our ability to name it, because if you think about it, you didn't get language till you're about 1, 2, right? So your first language is your emotion.
Yeah.
And we don't realize how much faster that process is. And when we feel something, we think it's true.
Always.
And as women, we've had PMS, so we know that that's not
that's
ultimately
not
true, right?
But
it's a little amplified.
When I feel something, I'm like, yep, I am. This is the word right here. Like, no one can tell me any different when I feel it at my core.
It's right and it's true. And then, you know, Imago has this expression, do you want to be right or do you want to be in relationship?
Right. So, yeah, that's true.
Sometimes you have to think
I know. I love the fact that you said that how we react is historical, because I literally flash back to how I have reacted in relationships before. Whenever a guy has been distant or detached, it like brings me back to my dad. Because that's who he was, and that's how, you know, the first, like you said, the template of love. And I would literally panic and start crying just because, like, I would be like, but I'm only going on vacation with my friends. Why are you crying? And it's just so interesting to me how we don't really think about these things, you know, when we're experiencing them. But if you go and talk to someone and go get therapy or just become more aware, you see that it's all rooted in, you know, the history.
And you added a huge point, which I use with couples all the time, which is empathy. You know, if you can see, like you just said, oh my God, I'm just going on vacation. What the? Like,
pretty
what
much,
the?
I would freak out.
But if you said to them, you know, and when you said that to me, what happens in my body and what I notice and what it reminds me of is my dad.
Yep.
You know what? He can see that little girl in you. And when all of a sudden he doesn't feel like it's a personal attack or it's against him, and now all of a sudden he sees how and why it's touching a much younger part of yourself, that's where you're able to cross over into your partner's experience and have empathy, right?
Yeah.
And so having those conversations and learning what didn't happen to you and the why you have certain triggers, right? Because we right. all have them.
We all have them. Listen, it doesn't matter if you think you had a perfect childhood or you feel like your parents are together. They could be in an invisible divorce for all you know, or they can be, you know, really loving, but still something happened in your childhood, or you have a relationship with one of your parents that's still affecting the way you see love and the way you are with your partner. And then you have these triggers and start crying because they're going on vacation like I did. But back then, like, I wouldn't feel, like you said, sometimes what people are missing is the vulnerable part. Like, you've tried everything in a relationship, but you're not vulnerable. It's so hard for people to be vulnerable, especially in these situations when you're in an invisible divorce. It's like, you're like the biggest risk, because you have to be open, and that means you could be rejected, you could be hurt, abandoned. It cannot work anyway, abandoned, all those things. So with my boyfriend now, I definitely, when something triggers me, I'm more aware. So I will tell him, okay, this, you know, is making me feel like you're picking me apart. You know, when you're telling me X, Y, and Z, I feel like you're kind of not accepting me. And then this reminds me of this experience, and it bothers me more than it should. But that's where it's coming from. So I love the fact that you talked a little bit about that. It is about awareness, and it's about empathy. And, you know,
and communication, right?
And we
the
have
ability
to communicate.
To express that, because they can't mind read, nor should they.
I know. I
even
know.
Though we have those powerful wishes. We always have those powerful wishes.
So how long should, like, so let's say, you know, you're like, okay, I'm an invisible divorce. Your partner isn't ready to hear it yet. So you're working on yourself, which is awesome. You're doing your work. But how long should a person wait in this type of relationship, this type of marriage, to really start confronting the issue with their significant other?
Sure. I mean, I would say that if you're consistently, and that's a big word and not one easy to manifest, right? But if for 3 to 6 months without slipping back into old reactive behaviors,
right,
you're consciously showing up, giving your best of self, the 100% or your 50%, you know, you should start to see the trending of a positive turnaround. And by that, I mean, it's not linear, but it's like a good stock, right?
Right.
It just, you consistently see, you step backwards, but it goes forward. Because the thing I want for everyone is, if worst case scenario, decide, you know what, this isn't, that my partner's not going to do their work.
Right.
It's not going to turn around. They're not going to look at it. You know, I wouldn't want anybody to leave a relationship with any would've, could've, or should've.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, you give that 100% because you don't want regret.
That's true.
Priceless.
I hear that
all
the time.
And it's a gift that you're giving to yourself by being willing to do the work even before your partner does. And, you know, I find that when you lean into someone, instead of criticizing and judging, they soften. I mean, and, you know, then you're going to have a greater opportunity when your partner is seeing all that you've put forth, because they will notice, or you can name what you've done and what you're doing differently. I think that really provides an opportunity for them to be like, you know what, I'm going to step up too.
Yeah, I love the consistency aspect of it, because I know a lot of people in relationships and invisible divorces who they will, like, they'll be like, but I've been good. But it's like a week later, they're criticizing again. They're getting pissy again. They're being passive aggressive again in the relationship. And then it's the cycle again. And you go back to trying to make it work and changing, or, you know, reacting differently. And then again, you slip up. So the consistency, I think, is super important.
It's so huge, because I can't tell you, it's like your partner knows you so well. So you're actively making these changes, but they're like, but I know you.
Yeah.
And the real you is going to come out.
That's pretty
and,
much.
And the reality.
It's like tapping on the toe, like, yeah,
and so
when are you coming?
Like, it's sort of like they've been feeling it for so long that it takes time for them to be willing to open up, to risk, to let you back in. And, you know, so you feel like, I've been doing so much, and you don't realize the impact of how long that cycle or dynamic has been going on. So it's like, I know that it doesn't feel good when it's not well received, but you got to keep giving it anyway, because you have to realize they become a hard nut at this point, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to believe someone when they've constantly, you know, just continue to show the same behavior. And even if you're changing, it's like, but it's been like 10 years, 5 years of this behavior. And all of a sudden, I'm supposed to believe that, like, you woke up and you're going to be different. So a week, 2 weeks, a month, 3 months, like, you're dubious for a reason. I think that's a really great point. It's not that easy, but it doesn't mean that you stop doing the work.
Absolutely, because it's the win-win when you do.
Yeah. And listen, like we said, relationships are work, and it's not a bad word. It's not a bad word at all. whatever you love, you have to invest in, whether that's your career, your spouse, your children, you have to yourself. You have to invest in it. It's not going to be easy, but it's not supposed to be.
Right. Give, give, get. Like if you give, you will get.
Right.
It's human nature, you know, and you think about it when you talk about children. It's like you see how we all know when we thrive and what kind of feedback and what supports us. So you're either going to show up in that way for yourself in your relationship or you're not.
Right.
But if you're protesting or shutting down, the only person you're hurting is yourself.
Right.
It's like that sense of anger. It's like drinking the poison, waiting for the other person to die.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're only hurting yourself.
It's in your system. That anger is in your system. Yeah, they're getting some of it, but it's festering.
And it causes disease.
Yes.
The impact of stress and...
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that you said that. So I wanted to talk right before the break, well, before we leave in a few minutes, I wanted to talk a little bit about conscious uncoupling because, you know, they make it, Gwyneth and Chris, you know, they make it so easy, like this divorcing, this separating, this making the decision of whether, and they probably weren't an invisible divorce because they definitely had, from the outside, this facade of like this, you know, great, you know, unit for the kids. And then when they separated, they still had this great unit. But I question whether their marriage was the extreme or the whether it was the extreme or the opposite side of the spectrum, but was actually an invisible divorce.
Right. I mean, we can't know, but I would imagine, especially with their schedules and careers,
right.
It's that idea of being together apart. And some couples are like an LLC, right?
Right.
They really are.
It's like Jay-Z and Beyonce. I say it.
They really are in it for the family and for the union, so they can run a home and a household. But
that's true.
That's very different than working on and connecting and feeling the passion of a relationship. So, you know, conscious uncoupling, I actually have many, many thoughts on that, so we don't have the time
right.
for. But listen, I do think that if you're going to make the decision to separate,
right.
It really does need to be a conscious decision. And it's really incredibly important that you both are on the same page and ultimately talk to your kids together. Because I think so often kids feel, you know, if only I had done X, Y, or Z, or a feeling that it's their fault,
right.
Or what could they do to save the marriage? So I think it's the most important thing for parents to do is to make it explicit that they love their children, they love their family, they will be committed to co-parenting, to working together, but that their relationship is no longer working and that it has nothing to do with what their kids have or haven't done.
Right.
I think really supporting your kids, recognizing that this has been a difficult choice, but that it has nothing to do with them is huge.
Yeah, I think that's where my parents feel. But just in general, I think we get so caught up with what we're feeling, what the other person did to us in a relationship, in a marriage, that, you know, and then you want to pin the kids against each other. So you have to come with a united front. And I think because you have all these feelings of anger and betrayal, whether, you know, the spouse cheated or not, or you feel rejected or neglected, that you're not conscious about it. And then you go to the kids and it's like terrible.
It all comes out.
It's terrible. Like they feel, I love the fact earlier that you said about the energy. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, people around you, whether it's your children, your sister, your aunt, your friends, they feel the energy in your relationship. And if you are in an invisible divorce, trust me, they know it. They know it. You are not fooling anyone by having a facade. So listen, you've been listening to Love Sue Haiti on American Latino Radio. Today we talked about invisible divorce, so what it looked like, what steps to take to change your relationship if you can, and obviously how to discuss it with your significant other. I love the fact that we really touched on awareness, self-awareness, just working on yourself, taking accountability, and being conscious. My guest, Dr. Megan Fleming, where can they find you?
Well, they can check out my website, which will be updated hopefully next month or two. But in the meantime,
it doesn't matter.
It's live now as greatlifegreatsex.com. And my Twitter is Megan Fleming, PhD, and my Facebook is Megan Fleming.
So how you spell her name, by the way, for the record, sometimes I do this because my name is so hard to spell that I always understand how hard it is. So Megan is M-E-G-A-N, because some people spell it differently, and Fleming is F-L-E-M-I-N-G. Thank you so much. This was enlightening.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
I feel like I had a therapy session here for free. I was like, oh my God, my childhood. I'm going to go to my boyfriend's and give him some extra sugar. I'm definitely going to buy him that card. And I recommend everyone to just like come from a place of empathy in your relationship. come from a place of compassion,
curiosity,
love. Do things sometimes just because you want to show your partner that you're there, that you care, that you're proud. Acknowledge the person in your life. It's so important because in a blink, they could be not there anymore. So listen, you've been listening to Love Sue Haiti on American Latino Radio. You can find me online as well, lovesuehaiti.com, S-U-J-E-I-R-Y. You could also find me on Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, pretty much everywhere on social media. It's all the same, at Love Sue Haiti, L-O-V-E-S-U-J-E-I-R-Y. Tomorrow, we have another show. It's a Love Topics panel. We're talking about courtship. Is it really dead, people? Are men doing the work? Should women do the work? And what are we going to do about it if it's dead? If it's laying on the corner? That's terrible. We want courtship. Please don't go anywhere because Tara Marie Live is coming up next.